Major Cochrane, Reel 9. We were talking about your time with C Company of the 2nd Camerons in the Bagouche box, just looking at conditions of service. And we were talking about the question of washing and shaving. Then you mentioned the problem with dust.
Well, there are two sorts of occasionally you had the real, what was called the Camseen or Camseen, which was in fact the dust storm. This was a very, very strong high wind raising the dust, and that just blotted everything out.
What was it like to be in, Rob?
Very frightening, because you could hardly see. You knew it wouldn't last all that long, but you felt it was very hot. Got even hotter in this inferno of a wind. You couldn't see very far. You sort of had to stop wherever you were, more or less. And if you were in a vehicle of any sort, you would just hope that the whole vehicle wouldn't get silted up. The much commoner thing, that was an act of nature, if you like. You had to just grin and bear it. But of course, most of the dust was man-made, in as much as every vehicle cut, even with balloon tires, it cut through this very thin crust on the earth. Sand, of course, is far heavier than light earth, and this is why the Camseen blew up such huge clouds of loose dust. Any mere feet disturbed the crust that was holding it in position. So a breeze, or if it was a moving vehicle, of course, its own wake would balloon up huge clouds of this dust. Everything you did in the shape of digging, walking, anything, created this dust. One of the troubles with desert sores was that, of course, they got caked in this mud. When you got sweaty, as you did at midday, doing any physical work, this dust caked on. There just wasn't enough water for cooking and drinking. The most important use of water, in fact, was, well, boiling things, I suppose, but making tea.
Where did you get the water from? What water you did have?
They came up bumping up from Battalion HQ, and the water ration was for X number of men. I mean, it was all done on a fixed basis.
Would you be given it in your water bottle, or would you get it as tea? You know, you were char.
You had to keep your water bottle filled. This was, I mean, who knows, you might have, if you got wandered or lost or disappeared in a Camseen, you had to have some water with you. But
were you allowed to drink it outside of an emergency?
No. Eventually, you could, if it had been too long in your water bottle, of course it got smelly. Then it was, you put it back in the Dixie, the communal Dixie, it was brewed up with the tea.
So if there really was a strong water, it wasn't a matter, the water you had in your water bottle was not there for drinking?
No, it was an emergency. It was a last gasp.
So what liquid did you get?
Well, the main thing was, of course, the char. That we had morning, noon and night. And it was delivered to the company cooks, to the cookhouse. Well, cookhouse, I mean, not the house, it was just a couple of stoves in the open, in sandbags and tins. And the sandbags contained both tea and sugar jumbled up. And this was poured into boiling water.
What was in the tins?
Condensed milk. It sounds, it probably would taste dreadful now, but at the time, it was absolutely a magical elixir, because it was, when you were pouring the sweat at midday, hot char sort of cooled you down, and it stopped your teeth chattering at night. It woke you up and got you going in the morning. It was...
Was it very sweet? Because people say...
Pretty sweet, yes. No, I don't like too much sweetness, but I was never bothered by char being oversweet. Mind you, I suppose that depended on whether back at HQ they had put too much sugar in the sandbag with the tea, or not enough tea in with the sugar. But I think on the whole they got it right. And of course the condensed milk tins were very useful. Not so much at that point, since we had a company cookhouse, but later on when things got mobile, a condensed milk tin, half filled with sand and with a few holes punched in it round the top edges of the tin, pour some petrol on the sand and you've got a very efficient little stove. And when you couldn't have a company cookhouse in operation, this was always a means for by a section could brew up its own char or whatever else it had to eat. Occasionally, or one occasion, I think the whole company, or certainly my platoon, was sent down. We were about 4 or 5 miles from the shore, inland, up on a low ridge of hills. We were sent down to the seaside. We'd finished building our sangars, and the division's recce reconnaissance regiment, the Central India Horse, they hadn't finished doing theirs, so we were sent down to help them to finish. But it didn't, well, it was a job which we did. But the great thing was to get a swim. And it actually been glorious to be able to clean all the muck off. And of course, you got back in the trucks, drove back 4 miles, and you ended up just as filthy as you started. But you had had a glorious swim in the meantime.
Now, what were your daily duties like then for you?
Well, after we'd finished building these sangars, the colonel, who was very keen on training, daily duties were obviously a morning inspection. And the inspection.
Now, what would a morning inspection be like?
It didn't mean inspection for smartness, or as I say, shaving. You shaved when you could. But it did mean, emphatically, weapon inspection.
And what were you looking for?
Primarily, a rifle that was not in a fit state, because of the dust, in a fit state to be used in action. That ammunition wasn't covered in grit, so that in fact you could reload the magazine on the 303, even more so that the Bren was in good nick.
The men must have had to spend a fair amount of time cleaning.
Yes, very much so.
With that dust.
And it was a daily job. It was just kind of, it wasn't a chore really, because it was so obvious that it was.
Would you do the old thumb in the breech thing to check the rifles,
yeah,
rifling?
Yeah, we did that. The old story, you know, that the good soldier should be like his rifle, clean, bright, and slightly oiled. And I think every regiment had this.
So you'd go round, presumably this morning inspection of weapons, you'd go to them round the three posts.
Yes, yes.
Would you drive round or walk
round? No, the truck was only used for getting heavy stuff up to the. Again, just because of the dust factor, the less we used it, the better pleased we all were.
Now, what else would you, in the morning, was it just weapons in the morning?
Well, the inspection was just weapons. And then section by section, they'd be sent down to the cookhouse for breakfast.
And that, how far away, about 100, 150 yards between your post, how far to the company?
The cookhouse must have been 400 yards, 400 or 500 yards away.
Back.
Down the slope, yes.
So that they go. That's that. Now, what else would you do during the day before we get onto the exercises? So you know, during the earlier phase.
Well, it was okay when the sangars were being built, but really, after the sangars had been finished and before we started doing the exercises, there was really damn all to do.
So what would you do?
Well, I amused myself, you know, on the day one section find a chameleon, and so we much enjoyed watching it change colour and put in a bit of a tongue, and that defeated even the chameleon. And then it was given a nibble of bully beef and off it went.
What about other animals?
Very few, very little bird life. Rather dull, actually. From that
scorpions?
Yes, scorpions.
Were they a problem?
You're always, you were told firmly, but funny enough, all the soldiers knew this from India. Never put your boots on in the morning without emptying them first, in case there was a scorpion. And this was something that Horbury told me. He said, you won't know this, the others all do. And then, you know, one tried this business of, would it be true that scorpions would sting themselves to death, and would they fight one another? Rather infantile amusements like this. But it didn't last long.
What about, they had poisonous centipedes in some parts of that area. Were you bothered with them?
No, I didn't come across.
Jaboas or anything like that?
No, nothing at all.
So mainly this chameleon and a couple of centipedes.
Very little wildlife. I can hardly recollect ever seeing a bird. I think down a bit nearer the coast, the shore, there might have been more. And of course I imagine in the spring after the rains, there would have been quite a lot of vegetation.
So you didn't have much to do? At that stage.
No.
Would you go back to the company headquarters in the evening for a drink with your major or anything?
Not
or
really, no. We had there wasn't much. We sometimes had a bottle of whiskey, but only sometimes. So there wasn't very often, wasn't anything to drink. And we very seldom, now and again, there was a ration issued to everybody of beer, local beer. It really was awful stuff, so brewed from onions, we thought, so it smelled like anyhow. But anyhow, it wasn't wet, at least. But of course, it arrived pretty tepid and didn't taste very good, still it was a beer.
Now, what about your night patrols of the posts? Because I understand you went
around. Well, I would go around the posts at night, because there was there's a sentry at each post to be changed at intervals. And certainly at least once a night I would go around. Then a little later on, it was decided that there's no good, we mustn't sit behind the wire waiting. We must get out and.
The wire. Who put the wire there?
Yes.
Who put it there?
We did.
Now, how did you go about that? I mean, because it's quite. Were we wired in as posts as a front?
Wasn't a continuous wire barrier. At intervals, it had gaps or bits overlapped, so that there was a channel, if you like, between two stretches of wire. It wasn't anything like a full-blown wire, as you might have defending a series of trenches. It was really more of a something that might delay an enemy advance. Wouldn't stop it. But it was obviously it was within this fence was within Bren range.
Now, what about these exercises then? Were they night or patrolling or whichever, you know?
The patrolling was one took a patrol out. This was worked out on orders from agent from battalion that you know, C Company would send out a patrol at whatever time it was to go so far forward of a wire and then they had to turn north or south along your own frontage for so far, then come back again through, so say, Don Company's wire. So both C Company and Don Company knew what was going to happen when times were given. And you took out, usually it was an ordnance patrol, not a fighting patrol, so it would be only four or five people that would take with you. And we never expected to find much, but never did, except the famous occasion which I took some time to live down, and I saw a nice red glow on the horizon, and I thought it must be an enemy vehicle on fire. So we went setting off at a good lope, this, and the corporal said, "Do you see yon glow there?" And I said, "Yes, of course, we're marching to it." He said, he coughed, he said, "I'm thinking it's the moon, sir." Sure enough, it was the rising harvest moon in September. Marvellous red-orange configuration. So there's a good deal of joking the following day in the company about this episode.
How did you find your way at night?
You had to do it by counting steps, counting yards, and with a compass. Because there were no landmarks, as I say. It was rather boring, so it was good practice, but this was the only way you could do it.
Now, what about exercises? You said the colonel was keen on.
He realised, of course, that having finished the sentence, there really was nothing very much to do. And he decided that we had spent a lot of time stationary. So we marched, and that was in very open order. I mean, we didn't march as a fixed battalion in column. Again, because of a dust problem, but we moved around in open order. Then we got our legs going again pretty well. Then the colonel started on some battalion manoeuvres with all four rifle companies and HQ company on the move. Of course, we covered a wide area, a desert, because you had to in the desert. You didn't move closed up anywhere. And then there were signals from the COs in the. He would either by flag semaphore or lamp or helio, which was the first time I saw that used. We did. Marches plus vehicles, testing our ability to find our way using a thing called a sun compass, which used to be fixed on the flat mudguard of a truck.
Do you know how it worked?
No, I couldn't say it now. But it was from a knowledge of the sun, you could work out, and knowing from the shadow. If you knew what the time, it worked backwards. Rather than knowing where you were, then the shadow telling you the time. You knew the time, and then the shadow told you where you were, more or less. This was the principle. And it worked okay. Again, on these exercises, this was a good test of water discipline. And I must say, the colonel kept us pretty active. And I think he had us certainly physically fit and working cohesively by the time we first had to go into action, which was October, I think. Yes, October 14th.
Just one thing I forgot to mention was the other two platoon commanders. Now, that you mentioned they were platoon sergeant majors. Who were they? Were you in much touch with them?
Yes, I lost touch with them. PSM Rooney, PSM Galloway.
What were they like?
Rooney, well, of course, they're both soldiers. They had been sergeants before becoming PSM. So they had a good many years service. One was Galloway was a biggish chap, heavy man, and when it came to mountain warfare, he was too heavy, really. And Rooney was a bit like Horbury. He was neat, quick, nimble, rather slightly built. And he, not very long, Galloway was wounded, and I think eventually sent home, because he had a good many years' service in India before the war. Rooney was commissioned. I lost sight of what happened to him.
In the book, you've got it as Bain and Galloway. Is that a different one? Company PSM Bain.
That book's right. My name is wrong. Really, I'm thinking of a quite different chap in Italy.
Right, that's okay. So, for Rooney, read Bain.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes. Chucky Baines.
It's got no S either. Bain, it says. Or is it? You think it's Baines with an S? No.
No, it's books.
It's all right. Yeah. I mean, books aren't always right, as you know.
No.
And how do you think they compared to yourself? You know, I mean, that they were platoon commanders. Only they were NCOs. You were a platoon commander. You were a junior officer. Do you think that there was any advantage in being an officer? Or
I don't think so. I don't think so. If you like, one position or the other was a bit anomalous. Because when there was an officer's mess and there was a sergeant's mess, i.e. when the battalion was all together in one place, the company sergeant major and the platoon sergeant majors would be having a drink together in place A, and the platoon commander officer would be having a drink with his company commander in place B, which I think is an anomalous position. I don't know why it was obviously started, I suppose, because of shortage of junior officers, but it must have been felt for some reason that it wasn't really a workable solution. But in fact, I didn't see all that much of either Chucky Bain or Galloway, because it was a very isolated life, not just isolated as a company, but even isolated with your platoon. I mean, we amused ourselves in the evening as a platoon before it was time for lights out and back to the section posts and sentries up and so on. I sort of sat round and looked at the moon and stone stories and gassed away. When we knew that the Italians were not going to advance, David Douglas, who had become by that time company commander instead of Donald Bannerman, who had been invalided back.
What with?
Again, these desert sores. I mean, he was so riddled with them that he had to be invalided out. But we organised as a company smoker when apart from a few sentries we knew just for look-see, we had a sort of company sing song and see what talent there was available in the company for telling singing songs or telling stories. This was all good fun. But we made our own music.
What about letters and parcels, contact with home?
They came not very often, but much more often than we got them later. And I suppose the time lag must have been three to 4 weeks, I suppose. I forgot the one. Oddly enough, I don't remember. I suppose I did write some letters, I can't remember much I did. But what I did not have to do, is I remember, which was later on in the war, what I had to do regularly, distasteful as it was, and that was to censor the soldiers' letters in case they were letting on inadvertently any military secret, which wasn't very likely in any case. But much more of that with later on. For soldiers who were nearly all conscripts, these old sweats hadn't got, it seemed to me, the same homeward tug that the later conscripts had. And certainly I don't recollect, I must have had to do it, I suppose, I don't recollect ever in the desert censoring any soldiers' letters.
What about, were letters important to you, letters from
yes,
home?
Very. Particularly, of course, once one got the news and one knew but the Battle of Britain, and then followed, of course, that autumn winter by the bombing of London. And my parents were in London, and so I was very anxious to leave. And I mean, we got news in the BBC sense by a sort of the grapevine, I suppose. There was a radio, I think, at Battalion HQ, and some sort of news sheet was scribbled out by the intelligence officer for each company, you know, so that we did know what was happening in outline, at least.
Did you feel a bit out of the way of it?
Well, at that point, yes, because here we were sitting doing nothing very much except be uncomfortable in the desert. And back at home they were in the front line, more or less.
Did you get parcels from home?
I can't remember one. We must have done, I suppose.
It's okay. Now, what about Mercer Matruh? How far away was Mercer in miles from Baghouz Box? Because it's quite close on the map. But
Mercer Matruh was the next stop on the railway.
So about how many miles, roughly?
I would have thought certainly not more than 20.
Because they got a lot of bombing, a famous amount of bombing.
Yes.
Were you bombed at all?
Yes, we were bombed at one point, but not really very seriously. In fact, I remember watching the Gladiator, a very old-fashioned aeroplane. The Italian aeroplanes were on the whole much more modern than the ones we had. But watching dogfights with these very manoeuvrable Gladiator biplanes up against the Italian bombers. Caproni bombers, I think they were. In a sense, I think Mercer Matruh wasn't bombed much just before December 40, I think, when it seemed to us, at least at our lowly level, that at last the Italians were sort of doing something, starting to move. And this is when Wavell decided that therefore was just at the right time for us to make a move.
Now, just before we get on to Wavell, so what about leave, local leave? Did you get any leave?
Yes, I got some leave in Cairo. I think two or three of us got leave. I'm saying that one, a couple of officers and a party of men got off. We had something like 5 days, which meant actually 5 days in Cairo. And that again, the main thing there was food that wasn't bully beef, but also water, bathing, and swimming any place you'd get a swim, getting really cleaned up. And that was a good interlude, I must say. Cheered everybody.
Did you visit the sort of tourist sites, the pyramids, things like that?
I don't think I went up to the old fortress. I went round some of the things to see in Cairo, but to my shame, I never went to see any of the museums. I think I was too keen on the flesh pots, and also, as I say, having 3 baths a day, more or less, and a swim into the bargain if I could.
What were the flesh pots like? I mean,
there were plenty of lots of bars. There were lots of cinemas, including cinemas where you could sit on the balcony eating your meal, watching a film, open air cinema. There were the equivalent of nightclubs with Egyptian bands and Egyptian dancers. Including, of course, the specialty of Cairo, the belly dancer, had one's eyes agog at that. Then The other flesh pots you could go to, you were allowed to go to the Gezira Club, which was on the banks of the Nile, and it had a swimming pool and a sort of club restaurant place, but also it was a race course. So I think in the season, whenever that was, it must have been